Okay, I forgot. There we go.
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Glacier Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
That's right. And we are going to add South Dakota to our fine list of winery special guests and everybody that's been on the show in the recent year or so. So, yeah, absolutely. This is going to be great tonight and next week and the week after.
And the week after, and maybe more. Who knows? I would, you know, South Dakota's got 23 wineries in it, so we might even get more response.
And that's about the temperature below zero over there.
Yes.
23 wineries, 23 below zero.
Like that. Yeah, that's about right.
I gotta see what kind of weather we're looking at, because I know it gets unimaginably cold out there. Yeah, it's gonna.
The wind blows out of Canada and off the mountains, and ooh.
Yeah. So we are
going to we're going to go to, you know, I just realized something too. Whenever we go to a new state, I usually tell the topography of the state and a little bit about it and where it's located and all that. And our guest tonight, Tony, we get in touch with him a few minutes after seven our time, a few minutes after six is, since he is in the central time zone there. And I forgot to do my research and the little things I always do, telling a little bit about the state. So, much to my dismay, I don't have that information. But I will tell you, South Dakota, for those of you who don't know, South Dakota is located in northern central United States. On the north of the state is North Dakota. On the east is Minnesota and Iowa. On the south is Nebraska. Ooh, I just zoomed out a little bit there so I can look at something, and it zoomed out to show me the whole northern hemisphere instead of just the northern place.
I can tell you that the city that we're talking to tonight, it's I believe the website says Garrettson, South Dakota. It is 10 degrees Fahrenheit right now.
Ooh.
Clear, winds are southeast at 20 miles an hour, so 20 miles an hour, 10 degrees. So it's like negative 100 over there, and humidity is 60. I don't know what it is. But,
it's just bloody cold.
Unbelievable. And then Friday, the high of 25 and a low of negative 4 degrees. That's just a regular temperature. Unbelievable.
That's why we live in Florida. Yeah. Hear that, bus people? You're enjoying beautiful weather out there this evening. You know, so, yeah. Yeah, really, thank you. Montana and Wyoming are to the west. So that's what we got. And, you know, that cold weather, it's a dips down from Canada and just swoops right down to South Dakota and it comes off the mountains and across Montana and Wyoming. And that's why it's so cold there. It's just nothing to stop the wind and the chill and the cold. So, yeah, it's cold. It really is. And what we're going to do tonight, we're going to talk to Dave Tucker, who is the proprietor of Tucker's Walk Vineyard. And Dave also has a lot of other titles to his name, too, which we'll have him explain to us and tell us about it. But Tucker's Walk Vineyard is the reason Dave got a hold of me, wanted to tell me about the cold weather grapes that they grow and how the cold weather affects them and what they're growing there and what's happening in the state there and all that. So we're going to find out a lot about this. I know it's cold there, but hey, people live there, it's great up there and all that. And if you go on to the website for the Tucker's Walk Vineyard, the website is Tucker's Walk, TuckersWalk.com, and there's a great picture of the vineyard and of the when you on the opening page there, just a beautiful picture. Obviously, the picture was taken in the summer and not right now, but just a gorgeous picture of it. So if you want to jump onto that website while we're talking, you can see that and look at his stuff and all. I think Mike's out there trying to get a hold of Dave right now. I see they're in the green room, it looks like, and yeah, and they're coming. They're in the hold room, and Dave's ready out there, is he?
Yes, he is.
All right. Well, Dave, let's bring you onto the air, and welcome to All About Wine, Dave. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
I'm glad you're able here. Mike and I were just talking about how your temperature right now is about 20 degrees, and tomorrow it's supposed to get up to a high of, 23, and then -4?
Actually, the wind is supposed to be blowing 30 miles an hour, and last night it was 5 below, so it's pretty cold up here.
Oh, that is just, it makes me shiver. I'm sitting down here in Florida, and that just makes me shiver just talking about it. Oh,
well, but all of our grapes are asleep right now. Everybody's dormant.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah, but still, though, even with that temperature, you have to have cold, hardy grapes. And that's one of the things we were talking about. Dave and I got on the phone for a little bit yesterday just to confirm this, and we were talking a little bit about the cold, hardy grapes up there. You want to tell us about the cold, hardy grapes and how they were developed and what you've got in the ground and all that good stuff?
Well, sure. It's pretty exciting, actually. We get our grapes from the University of Minnesota. They have done quite a bit of interesting work with cold hardy grapes, which in the development of cold hardy grapes is basically the crossing of Vitis vinifera, the California type grapes, with Vitis riparia, the wild grapes. And the wild grapes don't make very good wine, but of course Vitis vinifera does. And so what the cold hardy trait is pretty readily given off when they make these crosses. And the question then is, you know, which ones make the good wine? So that's the part that takes quite a bit of time. And by saying quite a bit of time, you have to realize that it takes about 4 years for a seed to make a grape plant that has grapes. And then, of course, it takes at least 6 months or maybe 9 or 12 months to get wine from it. So it takes quite a bit of time just to get one experiment to go through. And luckily, you know, some people have done that before I got around, before we started growing them. And one of the grapes that we grow that we're pretty excited about is Marquette, and that was patented by the University of Minnesota in 2006. And the next year, we had never tasted the wine. We just were hearing about it, and we got 3 plants. And then the next year, we got 500 more plants, and the next year, 500 more plants. And so now we've actually got about 3 acres of Marquette growing, and every year, you know, we're getting somewhere between, well, we don't have them all in full production, but they've been producing somewhere between 2 and 3 tons of grapes per acre. So
not to interrupt, but 2 or 3 tons, is that average, or is that low, or is that?
Well, that's You know, I really, it's hard to tell because we're so, you know, this, we're so new into this game that I don't know whether our plants are into full production or not. Generally, though, it could be between 2 and 5 tons if it's like most varietals.
Right,
but,
right.
But we just don't know yet. It's, you know, and that's another thing too. How cold can the grapes take it? Well, we don't know. We know they've been able to stand it to down to 28 below zero, but we don't know if they can do more, or we don't know if that was a, you know, because we had snow on the ground, and so, you know, we're collecting information. In fact, we have a weather station out in our vineyard, and,
oh, yeah?
And every hour we record the weather, and then the folks up at South Dakota State University are doing a research project to try and see if they can characterize how cold, you know, the cold hardy grapes can stand it.
Oh, wow. So yeah. You mentioned the Marquette. What others do you have in the ground that are cold hardy?
Another one that Marquette is what we make a dry red. It's related to Pinot Noir. And then Brianna is one that's more of a fruit forward white grape, not like a Chardonnay, more like a, you know, really fruity. It's a big grape that's got tight clusters, really nice to work with. Kind of a pineapple nose, kind of a pineapple. Maybe some people say apricot, but certainly pineapple. And it's, you know, it's a really nice wine. We also have La Crescent, which is another white, and we have Frontenac Gris. Some people have heard of Frontenac.
Right.
That's a red grape. It's a dark red, and then Frontenac Gris is a sport, an actual natural mutation from the Frontenac that's gray, but the wine is kind of a yellow to almost a coppery color sometimes, and then there's another brand new mutation from the Frontenac Gris called Frontenac Blanc. We're kind of in the middle of all this experimentation and new varieties coming up all the time. It's pretty exciting. In fact, I think you can probably say that we grow grapes and make wine in every state in the union now.
Yes, we do.
I don't know for sure if there's stuff going on in Alaska, but I would bet that every other state we've got things going on.
Yeah, the program, we've talked to wineries in every state. Actually, there's 3 wineries in Alaska that they do bring in grapes, and so they don't grow them, they actually bring them in. But there are wineries in every state in the nation, and they grow grapes in every one except for Alaska. So there's
wineries. Vineyards probably would be a little dicey. I think the short growing season would be a little tough.
Yeah, but there's some grapes out there that do have a, you know, pretty short period of growth. It's been working, but the cold weather grapes you have here now I know like the Cabernets and the Merlots, if those get cold, it freezes the roots, and that's really what the problem is on those. Even if you trim them back, the roots, and you have to stack around them and all that to keep them from getting too cold. The mm-hmm. ones you have now, you don't have to worry about protecting them or anything?
We really haven't had much trouble with Marquette or Brianna. With La Crescent, we had some cases, sometimes a percentage of them, maybe 10 or 20%, will die back to the ground. But the roots are so substantial that it'll take them just a year or so for them to reestablish their stem and their cordon arms, and they're back in production.
Oh.
It's really the part that's the hardest for us is if we get a late frost in the spring or an early frost in the fall when they haven't hardened off yet, because that really it doesn't kill the plant, but it's certainly some parts of it die back.
Right.
And I think what I attribute it to is that these plants are trying so hard to use the short growing season. That's kind of what they're genetically geared for. Is that they'll sometimes start blossoming or budding out before they should.
When do you get bud break?
It's in April, you can tell by growing degree days better than you can by the date in the year. But it's usually, you know, in mid-April we'll start to see the bud swell.
Wow, that is early though. It seems. I mean. I was born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri, and we got ourselves quite a few over the years late frost.
That's right. Sometimes late April we get a frost. Yeah,
right.
That's true.
Right.
Well, when I talk about bud swelling, that's the part where we start to get concerned. That's where we get a little uneasy, because if it's, you know, bud, if budding, if it starts to swell and bud out before, you know, we got that last frost, then that's where we can get some damage.
You don't have any wind or water or anything that you do in case there's a problem like that to protect them?
You know, we have looked into it. Last year in particular, we had a very mild winter, and I was concerned that we were going to start budding out too soon. And we did. We actually did have a little bit of damage. But we looked into the smudge pots like they use in orange groves.
Right.
You know, that would be – you'd have to have one every 30 feet, and it would just be very, very expensive. Plus, diesel fuel is not cheap.
Right.
And we don't have – the only kind of irrigation that any of us use is drip irrigation, so that's not going to help. It'd have to be over – you know, have to be sprayed on, and we don't have an irrigation system that would help us. So – you know, it's an interesting question, and I'm sure that, you know, we'll suffer for some years, but it's kind of the nature of the beast. I will say one thing, you know, they have trouble with phylloxera in more moderate climates, which is a root bug,
right,
nematode, and we don't have phylloxera here in the root systems because the phylloxera can't live through our winters, so it's one of the nice things that we have. We don't have to use grafted rootstock or anything like that because
Well, the hybrids, though, if you're hybriding Riparia onto the vinifera, then the Riparia is pretty much protected anyway. Does that carry over and help protect it from the
Well, the hybridization is actually done, you know, by getting the pollen from one from a wild grape and pollinating the Vitis vinifera, and so it's not a graft, but what I've read is that the cold hardiness trait is very readily given off, and almost all the hybrid plants have got that cold hardy trait.
And so, therefore, it probably picked up some of the protective genes or whatever it is that it's in there against phylloxera too. I would hope.
Well, I don't know that. That's an interesting question. And you know, there are some research projects going on right now to work on these genetic markers and try and figure out which genes actually are involved in helping to be, you know, cold hardy or to be phylloxera resistant or right. Even sometimes one of the other things that we have trouble with around here is 2,4-D spray, you know, that there's a lot of pasture land around here that gets sprayed, and
mm-hmm.
grapes are very, very sensitive to, almost all grapes are very sensitive to 2,4-D, so we have to get to know our neighbors pretty well up here.
I'm not familiar with 2,4-D.
Well, it's for broadleaf control.
Oh,
and
okay.
People spray it on their lawns. In fact, you probably any type of grass that they're trying to get rid of, broadleafs, dandelions, and that kind of thing. They spray a weed control on it, and it's pretty common. And it vaporizes and carries sometimes miles.
I'm probably used to it by a generic name or a company name, as opposed to 2,4-D. No.
That Weed Be Gone would be one of the ones that comes to mind. And,
there you go. Okay, then yeah. I am familiar with it, just not by the name 2,4-D. Yeah.
Yep. Well, and what people should know if they're interested in grapes is that if they've ever had trouble with spray on their tomatoes, if they've ever tried to grow tomatoes and had trouble with it,
right.
Grapes are just like tomatoes. They're both very sensitive. If you can smell the If you can smell the vapors from the spray, you got problems. So that's how we know that.
Yeah. So you, where are you located? I mean, what?
We're kind of in the southeastern part of South Dakota, and if you had a map in front of you, we're just a couple of miles from the Minnesota state line, so we're pretty close to Minnesota.
Oh, so right over in the corner there, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And your highs during the summer and lows during summer and highs in the winter and lows. And well, we talked a little bit about the winter, but what's your summer temperatures?
Well, we typically don't get above 100 degrees, you know, but we'll quite often have 90 degrees, and it'll seem like it's very hot because it's humid sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's the cold that really you know, we have enough degree days, we have enough sunshine here to get grapes to the kind of grapes we grow anyway to get ripe and the sugar to climb and the acids drop and so then you know we have enough days but not very many. We don't have too many days to get the crop ripe.
Your evening temperatures in the summer, your night temperatures in the summer drop down to what?
We can typically count on 50. You know, it doesn't get much below that. And,
but still,
and in
though,
fact, we grow tomatoes, and I think they have to have 60 degree nights, just to be able to get the tomatoes to set.
Right.
So I know we have those too.
Stuff, yeah. Well, you mentioned something there while you were talking about the sugars. What is the sugar level? What degrees Brix do you usually pick at? What do you usually aim for on your grapes?
Well, grapes in general are really the only plant that I know of that has enough sugar that you don't have to add sugar. You know, other fruits that we use, you know, we have raspberries and strawberries and cherries and stuff, we have to add sugar. But typically we'll have, for our Marquettes and our Frontenacs and that kind of thing, you know, it's typical to have 24, 25 Brix, which is roughly,
wow,
which is roughly, you know, percent sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So that high, that surprises me that you get, is it, that, well, again, is that, I think, is that one of the things that they are, when they're doing the breeding and crossing and all that, they're trying to bring up the sugar levels on it too, because obviously that will end up making for a better wine.
Well, you know, sugar is something that you can adjust. If you only hit 20 Brix, and it's typical, in some of our grapes, like St. Croix, doesn't really usually get much above 20 Brix, we can add sugar. And so that's really not much of a concern for the winemaker, but it is a concern if the acid doesn't drop.
Right.
Because if you have high acid grapes, then you have to treat the must and try and get the acid down so that you don't end up with a wine that has a lot of bite to it, you know, astringency.
And that's when the hardest thing to do is to control that acid, I'll tell you. It is,
and it's especially a problem if people pick their grapes too soon. You know, you really got to kind of be patient with them. And even though the sugar might be up there, if you can got a few more days, and if you're not going to have rain and frost coming, you know, it's really nice to get those grapes to. People don't want to have their grapes, you know, turning into raisins or have the birds eat them, and so they tend to want to pick them too soon. We try to be patient with our grapes.
When is harvest? What time of year?
It's generally the first week, couple weeks of September. And sometimes some of the varieties we're picking them in August, and some of them we have nets on there, we have lots of birds, and so we have to net everything. And
do you
so
really?
We,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
We
have miles
path?
Of nets. we're in the central flyway, and we get especially robins and orioles and the robins are the ones that really visit us. And then they're starting to flock up that time of the year too, so they really come in large numbers.
That's funny because I was we were interviewing some wineries in Long Island, and I asked the same question: when is harvest? And he says, "Well, first we have to net everything,"
mm-hmm.
and it's the same reason they are in the East Coast migratory bird path, and so
People who've got just a few plants, we've got enough that it doesn't happen all of a sudden. But some people say, you know, you see the grapes starting to change, that color change, which we're always looking for at that time of the year, and then as soon as that happens, the birds they know it right away, and so they're there the same day we are starting to get nets on.
And they're sitting over in the trees watching us.
Yeah, it really feels that way. And if you don't have the wherewithal to put nets on, people have all kinds of elaborate schemes. They have propane cannons, and they have recordings of screeching hawks and owls and stuff to try to scare off the other birds.
Is there any one method that's better than the other, in your opinion, or do you just net and just say
the only one that works for us is nets, And even then, we've got to make sure there's no holes in the nets. We've got to go out there and kind of make sure we've got everything closed off, because they'll find everything.
And the nets themselves, how big of a mesh? How big of a
They're special nets. They're you could buy cheap ones, but they only last a year. So we've got some that are actually woven monofilament. They're nylon, and they're easier to handle, but they're a little more expensive. And we know how much they cost because we've got miles of it, and it's pretty expensive to buy these things in 2,000 foot bags.
Wow. And then you have to store them, and then you have to get them out, and creates a whole new work.
And it gives some jobs to some high school kids that I've found here that can help. They seem to like to come out and enjoy the sun and help net the grapes.
Net the vineyard.
Did
the nets go all the way to the ground? I mean, you almost have to, Alsa.
Well, the nets are nominally 14 feet wide, and so when you drape them over, though, they sort of get a little bit smaller, and then we clip them. Some people actually use clothespins to clip them. We've got some special clips we use, but it does take quite a bit of time.
Wow. It just fascinates me because, I mean, you have to do that, obviously. I mean, the birds will destroy it. Down here, we have to worry about deer. I'm sure you do too, though. I mean,
we do. We have 8 foot tall, high tensile woven wire fence around our entire vineyard. 12 acres of, we've got 6.5 acres of grapes, but there's a yard around it. Then it's very elaborate fencing. Some people use electric fence, but we actually went for high tensile woven wire. And the hardest part for that is that you got to get posts that are 10 feet tall. And we use steel posts, but they're used oil well casings. So there's a guy that discovered that he could buy used oil well casings and cut it up into 10 foot lengths, and that would be cheaper than trying to get wooden posts that we could set.
And so they would weather too.
Maybe 30 years is what he says. But we'll find out in another 28 years.
Yeah, you never know.
I sure hope so, yeah.
Yeah, you hope it lasts that long. You mentioned fruit. What fruit wines do you make?
Well, we'd love to say it's all about grapes, but we've discovered that, some of the other things that we grow, we could use the tanks for while we're waiting for our grapes to get ready. And we also I've got a friend who runs the Cranberry Network over in Wisconsin Falls, Wisconsin. And so cranberry is one of our varieties. And then we've got almost everybody around this country wants to grow rhubarb for making wine. So we make a rhubarb wine. I'm not sure I'm totally sold on the idea. If you've ever had rhubarb, it's pretty darn tart.
Yes, it is.
A lot of people say, it's really good. You just dip it in sugar and then eat it, You dip it in sugar, it tastes like sugar.
Tastes like sugar, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything tastes good if you dip it in sugar.
That's right. So but we also have raspberry and strawberry, and we had pear wine. We had a friend who had a pear tree, so we got about 250 pounds of pears and tried that out. So all those are kind of fun to do. But I'll have to confess that I really think the grapes are kind of special. And almost every one of the other fruits has something about it that's really kind of tricky. It's either too low acid or you have to put an enzyme in there to get it to clear. There's something about it. Grapes, one of the best slogans that I like to repeat is that if you do everything right in the vineyard, the wine just makes itself.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's why the big move on the organics and the biodynamics and all that in the vineyard, because once it clears that point, then it's a no-brainer from there. So
sure. And if you've done a good job, you don't have to use lots of sulfite to preserve it, and all those things, all the good things that happen when you do things correctly or in the vineyard. But then I shouldn't say it quite so dogmatically, because sometimes the weather is not with us. We got to pick too soon, sometimes you can do everything right on your end, but the weather doesn't cooperate.
And it seems to me, of anything, that's going to be your biggest problem in South Dakota is the weather. I mean, you're always concerned about an early frost or a late frost. You're concerned about, you know, just something coming down from Canada, which obviously you're probably watching the weather continuously for stuff like that.
Well, I'll tell you what it makes me understand how farmers feel. You know, I mean,
yeah.
this is not something all brand new. Every farmer who's, you know, worked hard to put a crop in, feels the same way, and they wonder whether or not they should have put in the 110-day corn or whatever the options were, you know, that they had when they started. But, you know, it is sort of a crapshoot, you know, and
yes.
I don't have any desire to go to gamble money or anything, because I got enough gambling going on here.
That's true. Well, I planted 10 acres of grapes back in 2004 down here, and that was in the spring and the fall of 2004, late summer and fall. We had four hurricanes go through and drowned the vineyard. And lost all the grapes. So
you found out that grapes don't like wet feet. That's what
they
say.
They do not like, especially young grapes. They do not like wet feet, and they let me know in no uncertain terms that they would not tolerate it. And so had to move the vineyard. But still, you know, we're talking about weather there, but you know, you never know. It happens everywhere, I suppose. That. No matter what you're doing. I haven't had an opportunity.
And different kinds of grapes, too. I know down in the southeast, I don't know about Florida, but I know in South Carolina and North Carolina, they grow some stuff called muscadine,
yes.
which has real thick skin and protects them from, I think they have trouble with,
Pierce disease.
Powdery mildew or,
Powdery mildew, Pierce disease, and all that stuff, yeah.
I use
a hybrid grape. I use a University of Florida hybrid grape, so...
Okay.
As part of the vinifera family, and well, actually vinifera, Labrusco, Vitis labrusca family, and stuff like that. And
so
you know,
a little of that Concordy kind of.
But not really. Not really. It's not real heavy. It was bred to keep out Pierce disease, which is the problem you have in warm climates. A little bug. The glassy winged sharpshooter is carrier of Pierce disease and gets into the grapevines and then kills them. There absolutely nothing can be done about it. That's why we don't grow any of the Vitis vinifera grapes down here, because of
that.
Of Pierce disease. But the muscadine grape grows wild all of the East Coast, really. I mean, the South and all that. And the thing is, really pretty hardy to just about everything.
And I know some people really like the taste too. But what I've heard is it's kind of an acquired taste. And the little bit I've tasted, I didn't really acquire the taste for. So
it's referred to as a foxy finish, the muscadine.
Yeah,
that really. And once you taste it, you understand that term. But I tell people the muscadine is a love or hate relationship. You either love it or you hate it. Very few people are indifferent.
Another grape that's kind of like that, got that reputation for being, you know, it could be really good, but usually it's not any good, and that's the Norton, you know.
I like the Norton, though. I've always been a Norton fan.
They grow it in Missouri. We can't grow it this far north. But it's one that I think has that sort of lore associated with it, that, you know, if you're really good and know your winemaking, and, you know, if you really do it right, you can make some really wonderful wine.
Yeah, there's a winery about 20 minutes from where we are, and he put Norton in the ground, and everyone's told him it's going to get killed by Pierce disease. You're going to lose it. And he's had it in the ground now for, I want to say, 4 years, 5 years, and every year he has it tested, and every year it's tested positive for Pierce disease, and every year it continues to grow and thrive. And so, you know, everybody's real excited down here in Florida that maybe we can grow the Norton down here.
So even though it does have the Pierce disease, it seems to survive it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Oh.
So, you know, it's a possibility that we might be able to get the Norton grape growing down here. We don't know. He hasn't done anything special. He just put it in the ground, and it's testing positive, but it's just not dying. So So,
well, if it's anything like up here, there's a lot of growing demand, I guess, for good wines.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got, you know, some new, it's almost an entrepreneurial thing. You know, if you can figure out the new thing that you can jump on, I think there's a market. It's a growing market. You know, it's not a zero sum game, and we certainly sell a lot of wine from California right now, and I'm looking to cut in their market share just a little bit.
Yeah, and the thing is, every state and nation has their wineries, and they're all doing quite well. And, you know, there's that real possibility that you can cut into it. I mean, it's just
mm-hmm.
it's happening everywhere. How many acres do you have planted of each of your grapes? You mentioned the Marquette, about 3 acres or so, but
yeah.
How about all the others?
We've got probably an acre of the, maybe acre and a half of Frontenac Gris, and another acre of the Brianna, and kind of the remainder, I guess, would be in La Crescent and St. Pepin.
Uh-huh.
Smaller amounts. St. Pepin is kind of an interesting one because it's the only grape that we grow, maybe the only grape that I know of in the cold hardy that's a pistillate female. In other words, it doesn't have the pollen making parts to it, so
oh,
you
really?
Have to have it close to other grapes that pollinate the same time. And we use Marquette, but other people have got two rows of St. Pepin, one row of Marquette, two rows of St. Pepin, one row of Marquette.
Well, that's
and St. Pepin is an interesting flavor because we know some people in Wisconsin that took it to late harvest, you know, the ice wine kind of idea.
Right.
But whether it's actually ice wine or just late harvest is not the point. The point is that it makes some really nice dessert wine, you know, with high Brix and you know, usually stays sweet. It can't even usually stop it from fermenting so that it maintains the, you know, the real sweet late harvest wine. So St. Pepin's one that, yeah.
The St. Pepin has the high Brix on it, then it retains it.
Oh, it, yeah. Well, especially if you take it to late harvest, you know, it's gonna start at, you know, I think up as like 40, you know, and then
you
have to, in order to get the yeast to start, you've got to do some special treatment just to get things going, and then it might drop down to 20 or so, and then by then the yeast is gone, you know, it can't take the alcohol. And
I didn't realize that about the St. Pepin. I've heard other people say that they've had the St. Pepin planted, but I didn't realize it was.
That would happen with almost any grape. If you let it get to be almost like raisins, you know, then it'll end up with very high Brix because the water's gone.
Right. Yeah. It's nothing to, you know, just all sugar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hence raisins.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why raisins are so sweet. You take the water out, and all you got is a
sugar.
Handful of fruity sugar.
That's right. Let's see. How long, you know, Tucker's Walk Vineyard, how long have you been open? In fact, tell us a little history of Tucker's Walk Vineyard.
Okay. Well, first of all, Tucker was an Afghan hound, and Tucker was he was the inspiration for our vineyard. My wife would take Tucker for a walk in the morning and in the evening, and we had planted, somewhere along the way, we decided to plant just a few plants that we got from the University of Minnesota. And when they went on their walks, they developed this scheme that we're going to have a vineyard and we're going to someday lose our day jobs and retire and do this full time, which is, you know, we're well into that. In fact, I retired from my day job about 6 months ago.
Oh.
So, and Sue is still working, but Tucker's inspiration caused us to grow enough grapes that we actually had to become a licensed winery, or we had to start selling our grapes to somebody else, because you can only grow about 200 gallons of this stuff, and
right.
to make 200 gallons before the Fed says you know, we want the tax.
Wait a minute.
So we became a licensed bonded winery in 2010, and we're up to about. You'd call us a farm winery or a boutique winery because we're only up to about 150 cases a year. Maybe next year we'll break 200. And our business plan calls us to get to maybe 1,000 cases by, you know, 4 or 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's not really our plan to become anything more than a local winery, because this is kind of something we want to do and do it without debt. That's one of our goals, is to not have to we're not interested in banks or venture capitalists. We're you know, we're kind of doing this as we can. So,
well, I'm sure you've heard that saying, haven't you? You know how to make a small fortune in the wine business?
Yeah.
Start with a large fortune.
I have repeated that many times, and sometimes to myself too.
Yeah. So. You know, you always have to remind yourself that.
Yep. And it really is true. On the other hand, it is a lot of fun, and one of the things that happens when you try and do this without debt is that with the gambles on the weather and everything, we do sleep pretty well. You know, we're not worried to the point where we're gonna go belly up. You know, if we don't get a crop. You know.
Good. That's, you know. So, if I may ask, what was your day job?
I worked for the Geological Survey. There's a local place here. My job was to make satellite pictures into maps, and so I worked in the mapping division part. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That sounds like a cool job.
Well, it is. It was.
Had y'all, you both, you and Sue, lived in South Dakota your entire lives, or are you transplants or what?
We're both born and raised in South Dakota. And Sue's pretty well, she went to Minneapolis when she first got out of college, but then she came back and I went to California and went to college in California and spent 6 years out there. And that's how long it took me to figure out that I really would like to come back to the Midwest. So luckily I found a job in my hometown or near my hometown. So Garrettson is pretty close to Sioux Falls, and Sioux Falls is where Sue and I are both born and raised.
Well, that's cool. You both are South Dakotans. Are you in any type of AVA there or anything? Is South Dakota have any AVAs?
Well, technically, it's not an AVA, but South Dakota is referred to as a viticultural area, although not like the Mississippi River or the Missouri River Valley or Napa Valley would be the most well-known, probably. No, we don't have any. There have been people who have talked about one for the Prairie Coteau, which is a landform feature in eastern South Dakota. But so far, nobody's, you know, wanted to do all the paperwork and jump through all the hoops that it takes to get to a viticultural area.
Yeah, and
I'm not sure. I'm not sure you can convince people that makes that the soils are unique that area or anything else that, you know, the AVAs can sort of use. So long term, maybe there'll be something like that. But right now, on our label, we say South Dakota Marquette, and so that's what the ATB,
alcohol, tobacco.
The people who look approve our labels and stuff. That's what they will allow us to put on there. That shows that we're unique in some way.
Wow. Speaking of ATB, government, the federal government, the state government, all the government agencies and everything. You love them, you hate them, you want to hug them, you want to kill them.
Well, I'll tell you the best story that I can about that. We had a few of the grape growers and winemakers. We went to Pierre, which is our state capital. It looks like Pierre, but it's really Pierre, South Dakota.
Pierre?
And yeah, and we gave them, we showed them slides, and we talked about this, and the pitch we made to them was, we would really like to pay a lot of taxes. You know, it's our goal to get to the point where we can pay a lot of taxes. And so what we're asking for is just give us a little bit of help so we can get these, so we can nurture these little businesses we're going, so that we can all be good taxpayers. That was the pitch we made. And a hidden agenda, I guess, was, you know, kind of lighten up on us a little bit, because, you know, we got the Fed that, you know, gets the tax per gallon. We got the state that, you know, requires every label to be approved by the Fed and then by the state, and we have excise tax and sales tax, and, you know, and goes on like that. So, it's not a hate relationship, but it's sometimes it feels like they just got lots of hoops for us to jump through. So we try to jump through them and be good taxpayers.
How about shipping? Can you ship?
Well, that's shipping is probably a big frustration. I can't even ship to people in South Dakota, you know. But it's one of the weird things about our rules here. There's about half the states that we can ship to, and everything is decided by the individual states. The Fed doesn't have much to do with that.
Right.
And it a lot of reciprocal arrangements. You know, you can ship to Minnesota, and Minnesota can ship to you, and you know that kind of thing. But really, I think the shipping rules got mixed up after Prohibition, when the Fed tried to get out of the regulatory part of the Prohibition. But
right.
they let the states do that, and every state did it differently. So that's what caused it to be all kind of mixed up. And then some states got to the point where they thought it'd be a good idea if we could ship out, but other states can't ship in. And of course, that's a no-no. The Supreme Court says you can't do that because that's interstate commerce. And so then the rules got even more convoluted because they said, well, you can ship in, but you have to come through a distributor or an agent or a liquor store or something like that. And so
right.
so that was, you know. Anyway, the rules seem to be very strange and difficult for us to work with. And someday we hope that, you know, there'll be a new a set of rules that are more consistent.
Can you ship to Florida?
I'd have to look. And when I get an online, I don't really have an online. I've got a form that you can fill out, and then they send an email to me. But sometimes I'll have to say, well, you know, I'm sorry, I can't ship to you. So I'd actually have to look. I have not shipped to Florida, and so I don't know if I can or not. I can ship to, I think, 26 states.
Well, if you can ship to Florida, let me make a request of you. If
okay.
you can ship to Florida, when we first opened the winery, has been open for 11 years now. We celebrated our 11th birthday back in December. And when we first opened, I've been asking customers to bring me wines from different states. And I have them stacked up on the shelf above. And it's been going on for 11 years. And actually, last week, someone brought me in one from Louisiana, which I don't have. Now I'm down to only two states where I don't have wine.
Well, but you have to be able to drink the wine, too. So do you have empty bottles that you sack, that you display?
I teach a class. Once a month, and I brown bag a wine, and we score it and all that in the class. So the wines are actually shared in the class, and then I fill the wine bottle back up with colored water, whatever, and stick it back up on the shelf.
Oh, that's tricky.
So, but I don't have two states: Wyoming and South Dakota.
Well, you're going to have South Dakota. I'm hoping that the ATB is
not listening.
Yeah, there are some other weird things about shipping too. The Postal Service will not ship any kind of alcohol.
No wines at all.
But we can ship UPS or FedEx, but both those companies require that you fill out lots of forms. And I think what they really do is every time that I ship stuff, they report to the Fed that, you know, I'm shipping stuff. So, you know, it's only they're checking on me and making sure that I pay my taxes. Which, of course, I would never dream of trying. You know, we worked this hard to get the grapes. I'm sure not going to jeopardize my business by trying to ship where they don't want me to.
Right. Not going to dream of beating the government. So.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I guess I have shipped to Florida, although it was for another purpose. I shipped to the Florida State Fair International Wine Competition. So
that's down the street. I mean, we're in Line de Lakes, which is just north of Tampa,
the state fair
is held in Tampa. You know, so
yep.
we're right there. So
that was our first wine competition, and I used to say only because we've only entered one other competition, which was the Cold Climate Competition up in Minneapolis. So those are, but we entered in 2010. It was our first. It was our, you know, just we were just getting in business, and we shipped Marquette, Brianna, Cranberry, and Pear, and our Cranberry of all things got the gold medal, and Brianna got a bronze medal. And my theory is that they didn't know what to do with the Marquette. That nobody's ever heard of it. Didn't know it was in the other, you know, category. And also it was the first vintage that we had tried too. And it was, you know, from a winemaking standpoint, the acid was a little high, and it was a little bit past bright. You know, you'd like to say it's bright.
Bright, yeah.
Not flabby.
But it was
like into acetic.
Ah, that's not good.
Yeah. Yep.
Now's the time to send in your next entry for the Florida State Fair. I just received my notification just the other day. And
right.
Yeah, now's the time. So if you're going to enter the Florida State Fair, now's the time to send in your entries.
Well, I might just have a Marquette that I think might, and also more people have heard of Marquette. It really still is the up and comer, and we're the first winery in South Dakota to have Marquette that's coming from our estate growing.
Really? Yeah. Go online, Florida State Fair, and you can find the address and all that. But I just received my notification for it. Just that they're, now's the time to send them in for the.
We may try it again. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
But when we get off the phone here, you can send me an email and I'll get you a bottle of Marquette so that then you're down to Wyoming, right? That's the
then
last
I'll be
one.
Down to Wyoming. Yeah, that'll be the only one left. I mean, that includes Alaska and Hawaii too. I mean, I've got.
Wow.
That'll
I know Hawaii. Hawaii's got the Volcano Winery. That I'm not sure whether they got. Is it grapes or is it mostly other fruit? I don't know. But
they do some grapes, but they're noted mostly for their pineapple wine. They make a phenomenal pineapple wine.
Sounds good.
So, yeah, it does. It sounds great. But they said that people from around the world order the pineapple wine. They said they've even had it sent to the White House. It's been requested by the current and many past presidents. So it's really quite a wine, they say. So
sounds good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I can't help you in Wyoming. I don't know anybody that's growing grapes out there. But drip irrigation is. I would think you could grow it. You know, in terms of the climatic zones and stuff, I would think that they could grow it out there with a little bit of water.
And that's all it takes. I mean, their season might be short, but couldn't be any worse than, South Dakota or North Dakota or anything like that either. So
that's right. North Dakota especially. South Dakota, there's Zone 4, kind of comes through here. And we're that Zone 4 covers a lot of real estate. And especially if you got a little bit of lake effect, if you're, along one of the big rivers or a big lake or something.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. Before we go any further, though, you are the vice president of the South Dakota Wine Growers Association and acting president of the South Dakota Specialty Producers Association.
Right.
Tell us about both of those, if you will.
There's quite a lot of overlap, too. I mean, a lot of the wine growers have a pretty good relationship with the specialty growers, and some of them are specialty growers. But for the reason you could guess, which is if you're making wine, you want to know who's got the best fruit,
Right.
And all the people who grow fruit, and even people who raise grass-fed beef and flax, and those are all specialty producers. We cast a pretty big net to try to get as many of those people as we can, because South Dakota is so spread out. Imagine a state that's 200 miles by 400 miles, and it has only 700,000 people in it.
Wow.
And actually most of the 150,000 of them are in right around the Sioux Falls area. So, it's a little bit like Alaska to try to get, develop critical mass. and we've got several buy fresh, buy local things, which are around some of the towns. And those organizations, the buy fresh, buy local organizations are a way of marketing people's product. Imagine if you grew lots of good grapes, that you got to figure out how you can, get them to market.
Right.
There's just a few distributors, and so we got to be pretty creative about doing that. So we share information and help each other market products. And it's a good group of people. They're hard, especially producers. I would say are some of the most the nicest people to work with. They're imagine people who are quiet and would just as soon stay home and tend to their big gardens and their orchards and they don't want to worry about marketing and all that hype and everything. So they're looking for ways to group together, and find a way to cooperate, and so it's just a good group. I enjoy working with both of them, in fact. And the winemakers are all new wineries. We didn't even have any wineries until 1996.
Really?
And now we have like 15, maybe as many as 20, I think, that are
23. It shows on the list I have. Yeah.
Yeah, but some of them I think are not. They started, but then they moved away or something happened, and so I think some of those numbers may not be active. But somewhere between, I would say 15 and 20 probably would be a good number for how many wineries we've got.
Are they all members of the Wine Growers Association?
Most of them are. Uh-huh. There's still a few that we haven't convinced them that it's in their best interest. They're saying, hey, our grapes aren't growing yet, so most of them are, over half.
Oh, fantastic. That's a good number, though.
Sure.
Especially since 1998 for the first wineries to pop back up. That's great.
Yep, and there's a couple of the wineries are really doing good business. One of them out in the Black Hills, Prairie Berry, is probably the most up-and-coming winery. They make good wine, and they're good people. So
he's going to be my guest next week.
Is that right?
Yes.
Who are you going to talk to, Matt, or are you going to talk to Ralph? Or?
Hang on one second here, and I'll let you know. Let's see.
Is that Bob, or is that a Bob that replaced
Bob,
that?
Bob, yeah. That's
okay,
right.
Bob Weirich, sure.
Yeah, Bob, yes.
Sure.
Not next week, the week after next. Next week I've got Don and Susie South from Strawbale.
Strawbale. We all are well acquainted, and I would say we're not competitors as much as we are colleagues. We share information, and we don't have very many secrets from each other. We might have a few, maybe, but we mostly want everybody to succeed. I don't mind dropping names and encouraging you to talk to these people, because they are good folks. You just rattle off some good ones. Don and Susie and Bob and the whole Prairie Berry family out there is good people.
I have discovered doing this program. We've been doing this for 4 years now. And people in the wine business, this is what's so exciting about this, because I can get on the phone and people like to talk about their wines. Mm-hmm. And nobody's trying to hide anything. Everybody's very, very cooperative. They're very happy to share the stuff. And even here in Florida, I tell people, if I have a problem with something, if I have, I can't get something to, get my acid down for some reason or something, I've got a list of all the wineries here in Florida, and there's 30 of them. I can pick up the phone and I can call any of them and say, hey, I'm having this problem. Do you know what to do? And they won't hesitate to help. And I think that that way all around this country in the wine.
I'm not surprised, because I think you could speculate what's the reason for that. But I think when people really work hard and they're proud of what they do and they want to tell you the story. They're happy to tell you the story. And they'd love to see you participate, even if you're not buying anything.
Yeah, and they don't, wineries don't mind helping other wineries and stuff. And it's of all the businesses I've been in my entire life, this is the least cutthroat, I think, I've ever experienced in the wine business.
Once in a while, like I said, we'll have a secret or something that we really think makes us unique. And, of course, you want to have that too. But cutthroat, I never hear that, and I never feel that way.
Yeah, nor do I. And I think it's wonderful, because every time I talk to a different state, I get that same feeling too. So it's great to hear you say that, to know that that's actually still the standard around this country when it comes to
wine. It's one of the things that makes me feel like, even though I'm 63 years old, my blood pressure is not going to go up because I'm involved in this industry. I just think it's going to help me stay active and do things that I really enjoy. I enjoy every minute I spend in the vineyard. I usually enjoy the time I spend in the winery. So
I'm the same, and I'm 63 also, and I'm the same way.
Okay.
One thing I forgot to ask you, stainless steel or oak?
Stainless steel. I do oak infusion, but oak barrels are just really they're intimidating to me. I don't know
they're
if I could.
Expensive.
They're expensive, and French oak is even more expensive, and Hungarian oak is is high. Even if I use Minnesota oak, though, I mean, we're talking pretty close to $1,000 a barrel. And then, you know, you got to keep the wine in there, and you got to worry about whether or not you're having problems with, you know, the tartrates and you know, mold and things like that. So I like the flavor that I get from oak, but it's pretty easy to add. Well, looks like a dowel that they toast,
yeah.
And it has a spiral, like a spiral cut ham almost. It's
right.
Gives a lot of end grain. It's a spiral cut, and we can just throw those dowels in there, and about 6 weeks later, you know, we're getting the oak flavors, and then it takes another month or so for it to for the oak to kind of fully assimilate the flavors, so that it's got a balance to it, and then you've really accomplished. I think you've my belief is that you've accomplished most of what you did if you put it in oak for 2 years, you know.
Yeah.
Or a year.
And a lot of people are saying that, too. It's a lot easier. And oak barrels do get very expensive. Oak, though, is getting some great reviews. I've talked to a lot of wineries that are using Minnesota oak now, and they love it.
Well, I use Minnesota oak for my spirals, you know, for the,
yeah,
for the
yeah.
infusion. Yeah. So I don't even go to French oak for that. You asked before about stainless steel, and the big question out here is sometimes, is it stainless steel or plastic? And I can't make plastic work as well as I do stainless steel. So even though stainless steel is pretty expensive,
very expensive now.
The route that I've gone. I went from when we were doing hobby kind of scale stuff, we had lots of glass. We had, you know, dozens of carboys, you know, that we were
mm-hmm.
using. We went from that to stainless steel in most of what we're doing now.
The plastic's becoming very, very popular, though. It's amazing how many wineries are using plastic.
Yeah, I just can't figure out how to seal them up. But you have to get it full, I guess. You just have to have big containers that you get them totally full, because you can't leave any headspace.
And
then I think
there's a floating lid. There's a floating lid you drop down on top of it. And
even for plastic? I know we do that with stainless steel to the variable.
Even for plastic, yeah.
Oh, I haven't even seen those.
Yes, and you can drop that down on top of it.
We are trading news, you know, again. You know,
yeah.
I'll look into it. But I think plastic, even though food-grade plastic, you have to have food-grade plastic, is what everybody has, so that it doesn't impart flavors. It's still, you know, I still get smell, you know, even though I've cleaned it at the end, and I got to think that some of that stuff is going to be in the next batch of wine, and I just don't like that. You know?
Yeah, but, you know, maybe that's just you, too.
Well, I've even, you know, we've even got an ozone-treated water, you know, that's really very, it's a, you know, ozonated water is kind of the best thing for winemakers to use, because if you use bleach or some strong detergent or something, you know, that can really mess things up in the fermentation.
Right. Oh, yeah. Just a quick note for you here. Go to www.flextank.biz.
Okay.
F-L-E-X-T-A-N-K, flextank.biz. And they do plastics, but it shows you the cover that you can drop down on top with the flexible flaps on the side to seal it tight and all sorts of stuff on that. But, I'm not promoting them or anything. It's just, you know, just FYI, basically.
Something to look at, anyway.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Just something to look at. FlexTank, FlexTank biz. Wine trails. You have any up in that area?
We have wine tours. We really haven't developed a trail but around Sioux Falls, in the 50-mile or the 40-mile area around Sioux Falls, there's probably six, maybe seven wineries, and so I've had maps made up and that show that, but we do have bus tours, at least one or two a year, you know, where somebody at the the assisted living place, you know, has a bus tour, and they come out with a big Greyhound bus and make the tour. So I guess we've got the beginnings of it, but we really haven't marketed it as a trail.
You're young. I mean, it's always amazing how young the wine business is there. So
we're trying to get enough product. I've still got to get some product put together before I get everybody you know, beating the doors down and then finding out that I'm sold out. You know,
sold out.
We're sold out of several of the varieties right now. So, but wow. I've got some wine in the tank, and maybe you know we'll be able to by spring. I feel like we'll have some product, you know, ready to go.
And speaking of sold out, which reminds me, two of winter hours. Do you close down in the winter, or do you stay open year round, or what do you do?
Even though I retired last August, I'm saying we're open by appointment only, and that works to a point. But many people, you know, will drive by, and if I, you know, if it looks like things are open here, they'll maybe stop by. So we haven't. Published hours, but that's another thing that I think by spring I'm going to say, okay, we're now open and we will be here, you know, for at least 4 days a week, 4 or 5 days a week, and
mm-hmm.
you know, with set hours. But a lot of these boutique wineries are kind of like that. You know, we're in the you know, there are times of the year where it's just really tough to have somebody in a tasting room, you know, because you're grapes or you're. Or you're wanting to go to Florida for the winter, you know. Something like
that. I mean, there's lots of reasons.
Yeah, I was going to say there's lots of reasons to be closed down for parts of the year.
Mike, do you have any questions for Dave here?
I was looking at the event section of your website at tuckerswalk.com. If anyone out there listening want to go take a look at it, really nice website, a lot of information on it. And you mentioned the harvest in 2012 or 2012. Yep. You have wrestlers that come out there and help you.
Oh, pick. What a great question! If I could have had you ask me one question, that would have been it. My son was a very good wrestler in high school, and he wrestled in college, and he ended up coaching assistant coach at one of the local colleges here. And I've always known that wrestlers were, you know, real high energy guys. And so when my son said, "Hey, you know, we got behind on harvest," and he said, "I can call some of the wrestlers," and he ended up calling the coach, and the coach said, "Well, you listen, you guys, you know, they haven't started up. They want to train together and they want to work together and kind of develop a little team, you know, spirit and that kind of thing." So 2 years ago, we had 9 of the wrestlers that came out from the Augustana College. Wrestling team, and they got, you know, they picked grapes. Boy, they picked, like, in 3 hours they picked over a ton of grapes.
Wow.
I mean, literally. And so last year, you know, when we my son said, "Well, you want the wrestlers out again?" I said, "Yeah, I think I would like that." And so he called the coach, and the coach said, "Yeah, there's one thing though." He said, "We've been talking about it all year, and could we send some more out? Could because more of the guys want to come out here." So this year we had 16 of them. This is like a, you know. The wrestling team doesn't have very much more than that. You know, like 13 guys that are the starters and then a few guys that are backups and stuff. But they came out and they picked grapes and had a good time. And then we ate pizza and they even decided we talked about if you guys keep coming out picking the Marquettes, we might have to have your own label. And So if we do have a label, and if I get it approved, I'm not sure if I could get it approved, it would be Takedown Red, you know? Which is, you know, they wear anklets, and there's a red or green anklet, and the referee will say, Takedown Green, Takedown Red. So I thought maybe the wine would be called Takedown Red. Anyway, the Augie wrestlers like it. If you're a wrestler, you know, you probably think that would be a great name for a wine.
It's still
a great story anyway.
That's really cool. You need to do that. You know, yeah. Coda will approve that label. There's no reason why not.
Well, it's sometimes the double meaning though. I've got a buddy of mine that has a winery out middle of the state, and he tried to get one that he called Sleepy Time because he had his grandmother used to like to have a glass of wine and then she'd go to bed. But he had a label that showed a picture of somebody, you know, kind of laying down, and so the ATB folks said, "No, we don't want anybody giving the impression that this is going to knock you out, you know, or, you know, that has any medicinal value." So they're sometimes pretty sensitive about, you know, what kind of a label you put on there.
Stuff like that, they are. You're right.
So if they thought the double meaning was, you know, that the wine would take you down, then they might not like that.
That's very true.
Yeah. So it's But instead, it's, you know, my meaning is all these high energy, you know, collegiate wrestlers are out there picking grapes, and
right.
I'd like
fun.
To have a label that sort of memorializes that.
That'd be great. You really should try anyway.
Yeah,
any other
I may do
Mike?
It.
That was it.
Mike.
Oh, very cool. Very good. Very informative, and really enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, we love to tell the stories.
Dave, before we turn you loose here, give us all of your information, where the winery is, what, you know, email address, phone numbers,
okay.
address, Facebook, website, everything. So any of the listeners out there want to get in touch with you, or if they're in the area, they can swing by, just all the information.
Okay. Tuckerswalk.com will get you to the webpage. And email-wise, you can get to Dave or Sue at tuckerswalk.com. And we do have a Facebook presence. You can click get to it from the website, but it's also facebook.com/tuckerswalkvineyard. And then there's a Twitter. Some of these things, there's links built in, so we're trying to do a little bit of that social media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're near Garrettson, South Dakota, and all the details are on the website. One other thing we didn't talk about is the research project called the Northern Grapes Project. And I love to talk about it because Cornell University, the University of Minnesota, South Dakota State University, Iowa State, University of Nebraska are all kind of working together in this sort of northern tier of cold hardy grapes. And there's a lot of research that is being done that's useful. There also is a lot of work to try to help us market our products. And so it's not just growing grapes and making wine, it's the marketing of the wine. So all of those things are helping us to kind of nurture these new businesses that we're in.
Yeah, is there
I'd encourage you to Northern Grapes Project dot, I think it's Northern Grapes Project dot org. I think that's it. If not, Google the words Northern Grapes Project and you'll get there.
Okay, I was just going to ask you if there was a website for that. Maybe I can get on there and get one of those people to be on the program.
Oh, that'd be great. And there's some really interesting people. That project is a National Science Foundation project, but some other funding. But it's a lot of university folks are doing some really interesting stuff that helps us figure out, you know, when to harvest, how to control the high acid grapes, and you know, a lot of things that are very topical for us.
Great. I'll see if I can get somebody. I'll check that out and see if I can get somebody on the program. That sounds
okay.
Like
that is the website, northerngrapesproject.org. That's
okay.
The website. And we had a guest from Cornell University. What was he? He was with the
the Enology Department.
College of Agriculture and Life Sciences in Ithaca, New
okay.
York. Very
mm-hmm.
very good guest there. So, that's
good
another possibility. Very cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to participate. And
thank you very much.
You've got some new good stuff coming up, and I'm gonna start listening in, too.
Well, thanks. We appreciate that. And thank you very much for taking your time out tonight and joining us on the program. You were fantastic. It was very informative, a lot of fun. And we'll wish you the best of luck in your ventures, and I'll slap out an email to you within a day or so here, too.
Well, thank you, Ron and Mike.
Yeah. Cool.
You're
keep
quite welcome.
Yeah,
thank you, Dave.
Definitely.
All right. Thank
you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right. Very good. Oh, there's the audiences. There we go.
There we go. Bus people. Thank you.
Yeah. They have to go out.
Yeah,
they have to go outside to clap. Yep. Very good.
Yeah, that was one of the things I learned tonight, which I never knew, was Pierre, not Pierre, but Pierre.
Mm-hmm.
Always my entire life has said Pierre for the capital of South Dakota, and it's Pierre.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So we're all about wine, and we learn about how to pronounce the capital right.
That's right. We learn pronunciations on this show.
We do, yes. We have to. I obviously blow a lot of them.
You get the emails for that.
Yeah, probably. Continue to do so.
Yeah, that's all right.
Wow, very, very good. Next week, we are going to be in South Dakota again. You have somebody is lined up for next week, and I forgot who.
Yes,
was.
We do. We have Strawbale Winery.
Strawbale. Okay, I'll write that down.
Yeah, I have to tell you something funny here. Whenever I'm doing a state or something, I make myself up a master list. On that list, I put names and, you know, just so I can have something to keep track of. So when I, you know, do it. And I was doing my list for South Dakota, and every single one of the phone numbers, no matter where they are in the state, start with 605, because
yeah.
There's only one area code. That's it. The whole state, one area code. Yeah.
Now, I think I missed that. Did you, because I was trying to get him on there when you were doing the intro, did you cover the area, the population, all that of South Dakota?
No,
or,
you know,
or?
And okay. I apologize to the people out there, because I usually do that. I'm going to have to do that.
Yep.
Before we get started next week, I will do
yeah.
that. I usually
okay.
talk about the population and, you know, the elevation
counties.
And the counties
yeah.
and rivers
yep.
and roads and all that. And I just it's when we started,
quick.
I go, oh, we've got a guest, and I forgot to cover all that stuff. And
yeah.
yeah. Okay. So it's something
all
that
right.
we'll take care of next week and let everyone
yep.
know. A little bit more about South Dakota. Yeah, well, you know, Dave
yeah.
mentioned too that, you know, 300 by, what do you say, 300 by 400 miles and less people than is, you know, in some big cities around the country. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, very good. So we'll look forward to Strawbale Winery next week, which will be January 31st. So,
January 31st.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. You do have an event this Saturday.
Yes.
I believe. It's the 26th. I see 27th somewhere. 26th. There you go. 26th, and it is a wine fest. So everyone stay tuned, and we'll give you information on wine fest this weekend, Saturday, at Florida State Winery. Stand by. We'll be right back in, I hope this is the right one, 1 minute. We'll try this one. I forgot which one it was.
Coming up this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it's Wine Fest at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Come out and enjoy the live music. Relax with a glass of world-class wine. Participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have fun and shop our vendors offering many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. WineFest is a great time to pick up unique gift items. Enjoy your weekend with us at WineFest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From I-75, take exit 285 and turn west for approximately 4 miles. See you Saturday at WineFest.
Yes.
You know, that music doesn't fit the show, but I like that it has an ending to it.
Hey, it does. You're right.
You know?
Yeah.
That's it.
It's done.
Yeah.
You know it's
come
done.
Out. Yep. Come out. Let's see. Sam Osborne is going to be the musical entertainment this Saturday. Very good show out there at Florida State's Winery, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Let's see. You've got a bunch of vendors coming out. It's going to be a great time. Great, fantastic weather. It's going to be fantastic out there. And I was just reading the email on this, and something caught my eye and my stomach. Fudge. Yeah, that could be.
Yeah. Yeah, we got
I always have to make a
fudge vendor out there this time.
Yep. There
and
you go.
Chocolate,
so
custom chocolate. Girls going to come out who does custom chocolates. So
wow.
Yeah, it's a good time to do it. And it's going to be beautiful weather for it, too, so the chocolate won't melt.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I'm gonna jump in here. I found something this past week, and I want to share with everybody. And you know, for all of those of you who tuned out because you thought the program was over, you're going to miss this. But let me read you this here. It says, and this was in Beverage World magazine, December 2012 issue of Beverage World. It says the United States became the largest still light wine market in the world, surpassing Italy in 2011. According to IWSR, a leading provider of data on wine, spirits, and ready-to-drink markets globally, Wine sales in the United States reached 30.6 million cases. And when they talk cases, they talk nine-bottle cases is average what they look at. An increase of 4.2% over the prior year. The big trend was in Moscato and sweet red wine, where domestic wine grew by just over 5%, imports nearly 2%. As the trend continuing, consumers' taste may change, but growth is expected to climb. The IWSR forecasts that the market will reach 322 million cases by 2015.
Wow.
So, yay, America.
Yeah.
You're number one in drinking wine. That's, you know.
That's great.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I had to close the window. Great. Fantastic.
So I just saw that and I wanted to read it. That's people are drinking wine out there. Moscato mm-hmm. is growing like crazy. Sweet reds are growing. So keep it up.
Yeah.
And tune into the program. Cool. We'll tell you about it too.
Yeah, we'll keep you advised of that as well, and have some great guests coming up already. This is starting out to be very good. And plus, we're a featured host now on Blog Talk Radio. So thank you to Blog Talk Radio and our listeners out there for staying in tune to us and each week, whether it's live or on the archives. We appreciate y'all being out here. Would like some of y'all to call in, though.
But, yeah, no, that's cool. Would be nice.
You can't call in the middle of the night or, you know, a week into it, a few days after the show started, but was on. But anytime you want to call in during the show, even if we have a special guest, you just want to, you know, chit-chat about wine, please make it about wine and not, you know, you just got off a flight and, you know, it was delayed. call us on the guest line. It's 646-727-3235. Write that number down. It'll be available to you next Thursday. And we'd love to have you on the program to talk wine and get you on the show. You don't have to be an expert, you know. Just tell us what kind of wine you're drinking or what you prefer, anything like that. And ask questions if you have any questions for our guest or for Ron. Definitely call in. We'd love to hear from you. It's 646-727-3235, and that line is active and available during the show at any time. So once we go on air, call in and let's talk, and we can get a lot of people on the phone and go on with the discussion and say it's cool. So
it is,
do that, and we will see you all. You have anything else to add? Or
No, I just want to say you can also, if you have any questions, you are busy on Thursday nights from 7 to 8 and you're listening to this on archives and you still have questions, mm-hmm. then email us or Facebook, where both of those are available, so you can always do that. Lots of ways to get a hold of us.
That's right. We can, we'll definitely review the questions or the comments, and if it warrants an on-air response or something, we'll definitely have that on air during the next show. So if you are listening on the archives, like Ron said, you'll hear it on the show. So you don't necessarily have to be present to win. So.
There you go.
There you go. All right. We'll close the show down for tonight, and we'll see you all next Thursday. That will be January 31st at 7 p.m. Eastern time here in the U.S., right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you all for tuning in.
Thank you all very much.
And following us and liking the page and everything. I think that's that information is coming up, but go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And stay in tune with us there. And if you're on Twitter, it's the same thing, twitter.com/allaboutwinebtr. All one word, no spaces or anything. And be sure to follow us or like the page if you're on there and show some support that way. And you can also comment on the Facebook page and send us messages that way. So it's really cool. The email address right now is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Email us, stay tuned, and we'll see you all next Thursday. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great night and a great rest of the week. We'll see you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Oh, there we go.
Everyone dance.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr.
We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.
We never had that many, so 7. That's cool. No, nope, there was a 10. Back on January the 6th, 2011, we had 10 live listens. But still, pretty cool. I think that featured thing is helping us. You there? Where'd you go? Mike. Mike. Yeah. The girl said 5 seconds. And that was it. No, I'm not there at all. He is. I'm not there. You there?
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hang on.
Well, we just...
Okay, let me go back in the screening room. It's recording.
Oh.